Hey guys, this is And the Writer Is, and I'm your host, Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of writers and artists over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life and the industry, politics, composition, whatever. If you ask me, songwriters are some of the most worldly and intelligent people I've ever come across. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. Now, I'm co-producing this with my friend Joe London, who was nominated for a Grammy earlier this year for Best Country Song. He makes us sound like angels. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, go to Spotify and look up our playlist, And the Writer Is, or go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. Oh, and if you enjoy this podcast, please rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate that effort.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we get to this interview, which is one of my favorites, there's something we should celebrate in the songwriting community. This week, the Grammys announced that they will include songwriters in Album of the Year. It started as an initiative that Evan Bogart and I submitted to the Grammys because we felt like it was so important right now for there to be one voice in the music industry. And I'm happy that the Grammys, after 60 years, are going to acknowledge the contribution of songwriters in what is a collection of records, and that they don't exist without songs. So thank you to the Grammys, songwriters. We should celebrate this as we continue the conversation with streaming rights, as we continue the conversation with copyright law, that this is evidence that people are acknowledging the value of a song. So without further ado, one of the best songwriters in the music industry right now, here is And the Writer Is featuring Bebe Rexha. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. This week's artist has written monster singles, but her story is way more than that. She's featured when she's credited, and she's featured when she's not, because this writer's voice is simply made for radio. This woman has become a staple in both the songwriting community and the artist community. By way of the East Coast, this writer always puts her family first, and the writer is one of the biggest stars in our industry, Bebe Rexha.
Wow.
How about that?
That made me kind of like myself a little bit more, like believe in myself a little bit more.
Yeah.
Ross, I need to keep you around.
Exactly. I'm just a hype man.
That was amazing. Did you write that?
I did.
Wow. You're actually a good writer. No,
okay. I know, right? It took that.
Actually, I have a hard time writing stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't like to think when I write, you know?
Are you asked to do things like non-lyric writing?
Like when I do interviews and stuff like that, they'll send me like
questions
in the email, but I refuse to do that. I'm like,
why?
Can you just call me? I don't know, because I feel like when I start, my problem is thinking too much, and I just want to speak and just say what I feel.
Is that how you are in your real life too?
Yes. It gets me in trouble a lot.
Really?
The time. Yes. Especially in the music business.
Why? Because you just give your opinions on songs or something?
I think I just like, I'm not, I grew up with a young mom, and I just kind of, I think, I just learned to be. And
what is a young mom?
Like, meaning like she didn't like really teach me things on like, you know, like wait before you like speak. I don't know, just like certain things, like think before you speak. Like I kind of just do. And I think maybe that could be a great thing. I like it. Or you could be misunderstood.
Well, I mean, obviously you're a really instinctual kind of writer. You know,
yeah.
It's like you come in the room and you just start singing. So it comes from a, you know, well, it translates in that way too.
When I write sometimes I don't mean to do this, but when I'll work with somebody new and they'll say something, I'm like, no, like, but I'm not trying to be like rude or anything like that. But it's just like, it literally is like this wave that comes up out of me, and it doesn't, instead of being like, yeah, that's cool, but like, you know, like the LA version, like instead of being like, that's really cool, but what if we try it this way?
Yeah.
I'm just like, no. I feel like, I can't control my, like what I feel, you know, I don't filter it at all. It's like very unfiltered. Like I am the most unfiltered person you will ever meet.
Were you like that as a kid?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I just did what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, let's start kind of from the beginning. Cause you know, how does, an Albanian girl from Brooklyn become like a pop star?
I have no idea.
Are your parents musicians?
No. I mean, my dad played clarinet for a second.
Like in front of you played?
Yeah,
clarinet?
Like for a second though. And then like stopped. But like, they're not musicians at all. Like my dad came from Albania in, I'm guessing like 80 something. Mm-hmm. Met my mom and then had me in 89. Like nobody was musical in my family whatsoever. And I think with my culture and the way that my parents grew up, it's like you turn 18, 19 and you get married off and you should have kids when you're like 23.
Even in the U.S., it's not
even
like,
in the U.S. Yeah. Like all my cousins are married, have five kids. One of my cousin's wife is 27, and they have twin girls, and a boy. And that's like normal. Like I'm considered like the outcast.
Do you feel that way?
Now I feel like people are starting to accept me, and they're like, okay, wow, like they're proud of me. But for a second, they were like, what is she doing? Because it's like the way that I grew up was like, you know, all the way, like if you could go total right, and then like, you know, the music business is total left, and I wanted to find a way to kind of incorporate both and be in the middle because I love my culture and I love who I am, but I still wanted to do the music business. My dad wouldn't understand. He's like, just stay home and be a housewife, you know what I mean, like find a good guy.
Did he actually say that to you?
Yeah, are you kidding me? People used to come and ask for my hand in marriage. Like, this is a real thing. Like, they come show up to your house and ask. No, like, this is some, like, medieval shit. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, my cousin is here. Like, they would come to my house and ask for hand in marriage.
And how old were you at that time?
16.
And how old were they?
20-something, 25, 26.
And everyone's like, oh, no, that's totally normal.
Totally normal. Like, my grandmother got married when she was 14. Like, normal. Like, this is in the culture. It's very normal. Like,
so that's why when you say you have had a young mother.
My mom had me when she was 17.
Uh-huh. So you guys are, like, almost sisters.
Yeah, I mean, we're sisters.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like she just tried to do the best. When I kind of feel like my intro was kind of all over the place. But I feel like she just was trying to do the best to be that what she knew.
Sure.
So, like, I didn't learn a lot of, like, I just learned what she knew, like, you know what I mean? She didn't know. She was learning with me, so I didn't learn a lot of things. So I had to kind of like make a lot of mistakes. So like when I first came to LA for the first time and met with like a big publishing company and a big producer, like, and they asked me, how are the sessions going with my writers and stuff like that? I said, honestly, they're shit. Like a lot of the producers and writers are coming, like I didn't know they were high at the time, but I was like, I don't know what I did wrong, but they were basically showing up like really high and like coked out and stuff. And I was like, honestly, the sessions have been really bad. No, like nobody ever told me like, you don't say that stuff.
Well, why is that a bad thing? I mean, that's like, actually like a really valuable piece of information.
I got in trouble at the time. I got in trouble.
Deal with it.
After the meeting, they were like, why would you say that to this person? Like, you don't tell them that. Like, you tell them it was great. And then you talk to me about like how you, like what you want to change. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like so bummed out.
But in the end, that person was wrong, right? I mean,
yeah,
by you
absolutely.
Saying,
I'm so glad I did not do that deal.
Wow, that's really intense. I mean, so you start playing. I mean, when are you writing music? How do you get to go from like, you know, your parents aren't musicians, and were you just where? When did you start singing? Were you playing instruments? Like,
started playing trumpet when I was like 8 years old. I wanted to play the flute so bad, and I wanted to play piano, but the flutes were all taken up, and the pianos, you had to have piano lessons, but my parents at the time couldn't even buy me like a CD at the time, or like, you know what I mean? Or like Entenmann's cakes. You know, I love the Entenmann's cakes. Like they couldn't afford it, like literally couldn't afford it. So like they couldn't afford like $20 piano lessons or whatever at the time. So I couldn't do the piano. The flutes were taken. And the only instrument that was available for like free for rent was the trumpet.
Wow. So
I was like so mad because I was like, this is not cool. Like, I don't want to play the trumpet. You know, like 8 years old, you're a girl. You want to like, you know, be pretty and like play the flute or some shit. So I played the trumpet.
How long did you play?
Like 8 years.
Can you still play?
I could play like a scale. Not like a, you know, not playing
like. Have you put it in any songs?
You know what's funny? Me, myself, and I, the ba 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 ba. It's actually a trumpet part. It was originally a trumpet part. Do ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba. So do you? So you must use some of that. I mean that.
Absolutely.
That, especially because it's a really melodic instrument. You're
so,
not like
I'm so happy.
In the background.
Yeah, like to me now I'm like, wow. Like everything is so funny because when you go through things in life, you're like. Everything's so dramatic. Everything is so do or die. And then now I'm like, yo, like me playing trumpet, the trumpet is always kind of playing the lead in the band,
right.
Especially in the jazz band.
It's all
so
melody.
That at the age of 8, I'm playing lead thing. I'm playing melodies. You can't play like you're not, you know, if I was playing the piano, it'd be chords and this, but you know, from the age of 8 all the way up until high school, my ear was being trained through different types of music, jazz, you know, the marching band stuff, regular, like it was just like my ear was starting to get trained at that age.
When did you know you could sing?
I remember I was in third grade and the Star Spangled Banner would play every day or God Bless America or something like that in school every morning.
Right.
And one day I love singing since I was 4. I would sing to all the Disney Channel stuff. But like, yeah, like I wanted to be, you know, or like I wanted to be a princess. But, what happened one day? Oh, yeah, the Star Spangled, the announcement system or whatever broke. Like, so I was like, all right. Oh, say, can you see? Like, I was like really belting it.
Yeah.
And I was like nervous because I would sing it. Literally, I was so annoying. I would sing it every day, full volume. Like, come on.
You loved it.
Like, I loved it.
You liked performing. It wasn't just singing.
I just
you were like,
loved
I
it.
Need
Imagine
to
every
sing
morning,
that.
8 in the morning, how annoying was I as a little girl? Like, I felt so bad for my brother, too, because I was always like it wasn't even just the attention. I just loved music. Like, I just went, like, watch me, like, feel so good. Like, you don't know, like, when you're young and when you start doing music, you don't know about all the other stuff. You just know it feels good and it makes you feel some type of way. And that's the thing with music is it made me feel free. Because when I was younger and I had all these anxieties, which I had all my life, that was the one thing that would make me feel good. So I was in school one day and in the announcement system broke and I fucking sang the Star Spangled Banner like super loud. And then the teacher at the end of the year gave me a piece of paper, like those cheap ass, like, you know, printer papers, like student of the year. She gave me like, singer of the whatever, most talented of the year. And I thought it was like the most.
It's the biggest accolade you'll
like,
ever get.
Like, I was like, wow! I remember going home that day, like, so happy.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, it's probably somewhere in the basement.
Yeah. So you start singing, and then you, why do you start writing? Like, what, like, because there's a whole different process to be like, yo, I'm going to start writing songs. Because you're, you know, if you're a singer in New York, you could have done musical theater.
I did.
You did?
I did do musical theater.
Did you actually do it professionally?
No.
You just did it in school?
I did it at
school.
The Staten Island Snug Harbor in school. No, but I did do it. I did it for a second. And I did all the choirs in high school. So somehow I met Sam Cox. Well, through my mom. My mom worked at like a department store. And
Samantha
I don't know.
Cox
actually,
from
never.
BMI?
That's, yeah, Samantha Cox from BMI. But no, but you know what? I don't know but how it happened, but I just, I think the first song I ever wrote was in high school and there was a contest. NARIS, National Recording Academy, had a contest called Grammy Career Day and they would pick the best teen songwriter, like teen song, and you would meet like the superstar of the day. Like of the, you know, so whatever.
Yeah.
So you enter all, so it was 700 entries. I wrote the song called Let Me Know. It was me and a girl group. It was the first time I ever recorded my voice. I remember hearing myself on the mic. I was like, wow, I suck. You remember the first time hearing
yourself?
You're like, wow, I don't sound good. Like, you know, because you don't know anything about like tuning and reverb and delay. Like you hear the raw vocal. So we do this song. We submit it to the
first song you ever wrote.
Not ever wrote. First song I ever recorded in the studio.
Okay.
Like, you know, experience.
Yeah.
We submit this song and get selected.
Crazy.
I meet Chris Brown. That's when I met Chris Brown right before he even made it big or anything like that. And that's when he like Run It or something. I don't know. We got selected and I was like, okay, cool. But I don't remember. There was a lot. So I don't remember where it like started, because there was a lot of studios with like pee stained mattresses and blood stains, and we used mattresses as.
Where are you right now? Are you in Brooklyn? Is this like, are you talking about before you ever?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to give you a.
Yeah. So you go from this competition, you win this competition, and you meet Chris Brown. So weird.
This was like when he was doing like backflips and shit. Like nobody knew who he was. They're like, Chris Brown. And I was like, whoa, like who is this?
Right. And so then you end up in, you go from there to like, it can't be that much longer after that that you end up actually getting your first deal with Pete Wentz, right?
No, I was like 15 there.
Oh, you were 15 when you got?
Yeah. So I was 15, 16 there when I won that contest. And then I started using MySpace at the time and putting songs out.
Oh.
And that's when I started meeting a lot of producers, and I met this French producer, and that's when I used to go to Jersey City, and like I was literally the ultimate hustler. Like, didn't go to prom, didn't do on any of that shit. I didn't care about any of that stuff from the beginning. I didn't care about it. I was never a person of like I didn't care about being popular. I didn't care about any of that shit. I didn't care about having the dopest stuff. I just cared about music. It was literally an obsession. And I think it was also because all my life I had some type of form. I was very anxious and I was very depressed as a kid and I didn't know. But
as clinically. It's,
yeah, like yeah. For real. Like, yeah. Yeah, but I take it because that's what helps me write great music. And I think we all kind of have those. It comes, I'm proud of, you know, myself. And so I think, you know, from them there, I met with this French guy, and I used to go to Jersey City all the time, and I would beg my dad or beg my mom, and they'd be like, no, and then take a train or bus or whatever, take the ferry to the city.
You would do it without, even when they didn't want you to do it.
Yeah, take the train, stand on train 30 minutes, then take the ferry for another 30 minutes, then walk to the train, then go to wherever on to take a train to Jersey, take a bus to Jersey City, then walk to his fucking house. It would take 3 hours. Then go to the studio. He would have a pee stained mattress that went against the wall with some cheap ass mic, and we would record like that.
Whoa.
And that was one thing. Then there would be times where I would go to Bridgeport, Connecticut. Bridgeport, Connecticut's 3 hours now. I was a fucking hustler. Like, I didn't care. I would meet producers. And that's why, like, sometimes people, when they meet me, I feel misunderstood because they're like, wow, you're so hard or like whatever. But I'm like, you have to kind of build yourself that way because you didn't want to be taken advantage of, you know?
Right.
And a lot of like these, you know, bigger producers and stuff like that, they think that I'm like, I go in thinking that I know that I'm the shit or I'm like a bitch. But it's just like, it was my culture of me being like, I had to be strong for myself to want to do this career and really be strong because I was told no, no, no. And then it's also the New York City mentality and really hustling.
Did you feel like people were taking advantage of you because you were a young female?
Of course. Are you kidding me? All the time. I had a producer tell me, don't tell your mom, take the train. Do not tell her you're coming here.
What? So you must have been freaked out. Did you still go?
Hell no. Are you crazy? I wasn't dumb.
Oh my
you know,
God.
So like from that, I was trying. So from that, I was doing that stuff, and then I met another producer in New York City, and we started writing songs together. And that's when I started producing, and I saved up money. I got a job as a perfume girl. I saved up money. I bought two KRK speakers. I bought fucking Pro Tools. I got a cheap ass Rode microphone. I bought Auto-Tune for the first time because it was like the hottest thing at the time. It was like $300. Like, shit, $300 for Auto-Tune? What the fuck? And then I was like, yeah. Like, literally, and my Auto-Tune was so, like, you know how it's latent?
Yeah.
Like, I learned to sing to match that latentness.
Yeah.
So now when I sing in the studio, I'm always ahead of the beat. Like,
that's
a second
so funny.
Ahead of the beat. It's some weird shit.
I'm always singing behind it. My Logic at the time when I was broke as shit, like, it would always record me. It would always record off. So I learned to sing
that's
behind
what I'm
the
saying.
Beat
Isn't
so
that
much.
Crazy?
Because I couldn't figure out the latency. So instead, you just learn how to sing it wrong.
Yeah, so I met a producer.
So funny.
There were so many people. Like, and then I met a producer. Then we started working together, and then I fell into this K-pop world. I don't know how the fuck that happened, but I ended up having like a big ass K-pop song that was like massive.
Wow.
And they
Who was it with?
Shinee. Okay. Shinee, their song called Lucifer.
Okay.
And then I had...
How old were you at this point?
17.
Were you still in school?
Yeah, I just went into college at this point.
Okay.
Just 17 going to college, right?
That's crazy.
No, actually... Yeah, 18.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's so young to be getting, you know,
I didn't know, though. I didn't know, though. And at the time, I had a lawyer. He didn't really believe in me and, like, think that, like, he didn't think these songs would be big. And they ended up being massive. And I had three of them because there's a big, like, record label out there. I didn't know. So they call me one day. They're like, we'll give you $5,000. I was like, $5,000?
Yeah. Yeah, then your parents are like, wow, you just came home with
five. No, and
then
I told my mom, I was like, Mom, they want to give me $5,000 for this one song. She's like, no, ask for 15. I was like, wow, 15? So I called them. I was like, yo, I was like, I need 15. I, you know, picked up my phone. I was like, I need 15K. They wired that shit in an hour later.
Wow.
Damn, now I found out when I was about to, like, you know, fast forward when I was getting my publishing deal, they're like, wow, you got fucked over. You should have made way, like right. You could have, you know, put a down payment on a house. I was like, wow, I'm an idiot. I didn't know.
Sure.
I didn't have, the one thing with me also is that I didn't, so like, you know, I had to learn, you know, and I think that's the beauty of life. You know, I never regret anything, you know, so I had to learn the hard way, you know, but I think that's what makes me who I am. And that's what makes my story, you know.
How does your song get heard by people in Korea, or how does it, like, I mean, it's one
thing.
So
I was
working
with this producer who had a connect with this guy in Korea, and he was looking for songs. So they didn't tell me that they also kind of shopped behind my back. So I didn't really know. Like, I was going in the studio working on my project. You know, I always loved music, so I was writing on my own artistry. So I didn't know.
Right. When you're putting up stuff on MySpace and whatever, is there starting to be, are you getting hit up by labels and stuff? Or are you playing shows at this point? And are,
No.
Was it just more?
It was just more like writing songs and like putting songs up and just building like a small fan base.
Was it working?
No. I had like 4,000 fans.
You still have that MySpace page up?
Yeah. I took all those songs down, so don't even try.
Oh, man.
I took all the pictures down. Me with like a guitar in my hand. At the time, I didn't even play guitar.
Were you doing? Like, was it? Oh, you didn't play guitar. Did you? Were you? What kind of music was it at that time? Was it the same kind of music you're releasing now?
When I first started writing in high school, I was a I played trumpet, so I was into all that stuff. Then when I went into high school, I joined the choir. And we started singing some, like, then I joined a madrigal choir, which is all a cappella, which is weird. Then I found out that I could sing opera, which that was fucking weird. I had, like, the craziest high range. I don't know what she was telling me, but I could hit one of the highest notes or something.
Yeah.
So I started joining all these competitions and winning. Literally winning. Like, my dad was like, okay, you could be an opera singer. That's acceptable within the culture. You could have like a family, and that's like a beautiful thing. We could watch your show. Like, I respect that. And I could listen to this tape and sing opera back perfectly. Like, I could sing, obviously opera, then I learned is, you know, it takes years and you got to be in your 30s and respected, and it's a political thing. But I could play Brene Fleming back and sing exactly how she was singing. And I was like, how?
You just can emulate.
Exactly.
It's
really, sound exactly
it's
like
strange
it.
That you can, that you emulate, I guess it's not, but you emulate, if you emulate that well, because so much of your career has been other people emulating how you sing naturally. So you know what I mean? Like, I'm, you found your own voice somewhere in there.
Yeah, so it's like, I think.
Because you have a unique tone.
So with the trumpet, and what's funny now, when everybody goes, woo, or, yeah. You know, when you go, woo, in me, or, when that's on then, where is that coming from? That's coming from, oh, mio bambino caro, mi piace, it's from that. That's where it's coming from. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, studying that. But like, that made sense to me. That all made sense to me, because I'm like, wow, the trumpet plus the opera thing. I was obsessed with opera for a second. Like, obsessed.
Yeah.
Like, was about to go to Italy to do a big competition. And then it hit me, and I'm like, no, but I don't want to do this. Like, I want to do pop music. I want to be like, I want to feel the way that I want to make people feel the way that I felt when I first heard Backstreet Boys. You know what I mean? Or like when I first heard Genie in a Bottle by Christina Aguilera. Like, there's something so magical in that, and something that made me feel so free about those songs. And then from there, I fell into some weird 1 year when I was just listening to straight up Stevie Wonder and tons of neo soul. I don't know how. So like, I remember writing songs like literally the first, like the, like I think like the first song that I wrote was on the way like this. Boy, you know I love you. You know I really do. Every time I see your face, I fall more in love with you. Like, what the hell? Like, I wasn't even in love. And like, why was I singing like that? I was so confused.
That's really good still.
Yeah?
Have you used that since?
No.
You should put
my
it in
computer,
something.
I literally had my Karen hit up my manager and be like, I'll give you like $1 million for her old computer. Like my old computer has so much shit in it, but it's like a mess. Like there's so much stuff in there.
Just going through it. Oh, I'm yeah. sure.
But then the question that you asked me, I'm sorry. But it's a little early for me. I'm jet lagged from Europe. I'm like all over the place, you know?
But you make a decision somewhere along the way where you're like, I'm going to choose to, instead of doing the opera stuff, I want to be a pop star. And you make this conscious decision.
So then I make this decision, right? And I'm doing all this MySpace stuff. I'm writing, I'm hustling, I'm doing all this stuff. And then along the way, I meet after the BMI, after the NARS thing. I meet Sam Cox at BMI.
Yeah.
Because then for a second, I love her to death. Yeah. And I was writing, but she put it in perspective. She's like, let me play you this girl, Gaga. I was like, Gaga? What the fuck is that name? Gaga?
Right.
And she played, no, like literally you should go look at her website and stuff like that. She writes all her own songs. And she played Just Dance, Gonna Be Okay. I remember hearing it for the first time. Nothing. Literally at the time, the song, I don't know, on YouTube or whatever, had like 2,000 plays. Right. Like nothing. And I was like, I kind of like this. I was like, okay. And then it like blew up. And at that time, Sam was telling me in that meeting, I remember the meeting exactly. I remember telling me about Gaga. And I remember telling me like how I was probably right after that whole thing, 18, 17, something like that.
Yeah.
Or met her younger probably. She was like, you need to really focus on your writing. Because one day you're going to thank me. And one day that's where all your power is going to lie. Even in your artistry, if you want to truly be an artist. And at the time I was so impatient. I was like, no, but I just want to do it. Help me get a record deal. Like, because I thought that was the answer. Like a record deal. Like when you get the record deal, you're going to fucking, that's it. It's over for you. You know what I mean? You sign the deal with some like balloons, champagne popping, champagne rainfall. Like, oh, hell no. I was completely wrong about that one.
It's weird. Even the artists, when they get that record deal and you're like, no, they still need a hit song. And if you're not capable of writing it, you're just like, you're waiting. Still looking for a jackpot.
Scary to me. That's scary. So I forever, I'm thankful for that lady. Sam Cox has been like the most like loving, like
she's
my bitch for life. Like,
yeah.
Like that's a real fucking, she's a real fucking bad bitch.
Yeah.
And I respect her. She works for BMI. Sometimes I'm like, I remember, you know, I there's been many times in the past where I begged her to manage me because there's something about her that's so calming and so amazing. I'm like, yo, Sam, like, you gotta do. She's like, no, I love BMI. I don't want to get in trouble. She's like, I love this job. I love what I do. And she to me, no, like to me, like also like she's, you know, like even with the monster, when we did the monster, she was also part of that vibe. It was a whole group of people and it kind of was like a magical thing that happened when we set the session up, but she was also involved with that. Crazy. So like, she's always kind of like in the know of what's new and what's fresh. And I remember telling her about Emily Warren, you know what I mean? So like, she's always like kind of like in the know.
Yeah.
And I'm forever grateful for her. Like she, like at times I would get frustrated with her because I just wanted her to like kind of help me or like make things happen for me. But then you had to do it yourself. You got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And now I see, I'm like, wow, like I'm like, she made me go to these Nashville writing sessions, these country writing sessions or these pop writing sessions that BMI would offer for like the time, like creative workshops. And I was like the youngest person in the room with like all these old 40-year-old men like writing these country songs. And I sucked. Like my songs sucked. Like I didn't know how to fucking write a song.
Did you know that they sucked at the time?
Yeah. I knew my song sucked. That's why I never actually went to go. Like, I remember when I first met my first lawyer, he's like, do you want to like go? Like, what's the vibe? I'm like, I don't, honestly, I'm not ready. I was like, I'm not ready. I never felt like I was ready. My music was never ready. It was never good enough. Like as an artist, like straight up.
Do you still feel that way?
Sometimes, you know, but like sometimes now I'm starting to feel a little bit better, like about some songs, but I never feel like anything is ever good enough.
Yeah. It's weird. I remember people asking for songs for your band that people were like, do you have any ideas for the Black Cards? It's Pete Wentz and this girl.
I knew it was not going to go anywhere.
But the fact is they didn't realize they were sitting on like
this gold mine of a songwriter. They wouldn't let me write.
Why? How did they not know that they were sitting on you
they
as a
did.
Songwriter?
Then they started having me write. Well, I went there to go songwrite. But I think a lot of these songs, I think what happened was the project was already, because the project already started, so they had this concept of what they wanted the project to be.
Right.
And I don't think anything was really clicking. I don't think anybody really fucked with it. I think the magic between, I think Pete can do it himself too, but I think the magic of Fall Out Boy is Patrick. It made sense to me when I met Patrick in the studio and when seeing Pete's lyrics. There's something magical between Patrick Stump and Pete Wentz. Magical. Like, yeah. It just made sense to me when I saw them work in the studio. And I honestly, listen, that project I knew was not going to go anywhere. I just knew it.
Right.
It didn't feel right. And I tried to speak up, but I was new and I didn't have any hits. I didn't have anything. And like, here's Sam Hollander and Pete Wentz and Crush. And they've had, you know, they had, at the time they had Billionaire with Travis McCoy and all this, whatever, yeah. You know, those boys, not boys like girls.
Panic at the Disco
and all these things. These big, big kind of like artists. So like, who was I to like say anything, you know?
So when you finally go away from that, I mean, there's already people who at that point start to know who you are because word travels quick a little bit, right? I mean, like...
When I left the group?
Yeah, like, how soon after that did you get did you sign as a solo artist?
Not soon at all. What do you mean? I was signed there 19. I signed him when I was 19. We traveled the world for like 2 years. I was 21 when they were like, this is not working, sorry.
You traveled the world, though, as the Black
Hearts? Yeah, we went to Dubai, went to London, we went everywhere. Yeah. See, that's why I'm grateful for Pete, too, because, like, I think it was just a misunderstanding, and I think that I was too scared to, like, speak up or say things, and I was very fearful. And I think that, or, like, I wish they would have, like, listened to me a little bit more, but I still can't blame them because they believed in me. And the simplest things, like learning how to use in-ears, learning how to talk on stage, learning how to use the stage, learning how to do press, learning how to, the stuff, and like, that was, like, the ultimate boot camp for an artist. Then when I was going to do my next record deal and they're like, well, you got to do that. I was like, you have no idea. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've done this shit. Like, I know. Like, I was there with Pete. Like, I learned.
Did you guys have a fan base in these countries or was it more like opening situations? I mean,
no, we had like fan bases. We had like shows.
Did they ever go to radio with anything with your voice on it?
No.
So it didn't get that far. Almost did.
No, yeah. They try to go with something. It wasn't right.
So when did you leave it then?
I didn't leave it. They dropped me.
Wow.
Well, he didn't even drop me. My managers called me one day and they're like, he doesn't want you to be in the band anymore. I was like heartbroken. I like walked like, because their management office was on like 12th Street or something. Yeah. I walked like up to 125th Street crying. Like I was, because I didn't know.
That was your shot.
I thought it was my shot and I was like, wow, this shit is over. And I was like so upset. Like, so upset because even in this whole process, I told my dad, I was like, I promise you're going to see, like, this is going to, because my dad was so against it. He's like, there's no way you're going to Dubai on yourself. And I couldn't bring my mom. I was 19, so I wasn't like underage and all that. There was no way I could bring my parents. It was like, I had to go and be a big girl and I hated flying and I never traveled. You know, imagine being like with a very protective family and, you know, I was a renegade and I would do things like, you know, but like, what is like taking the bus compared to like flying to Dubai? You know what I mean? Like, that's like a different, whole different story. But I was like, oh my God, that day was the worst day of my life. I was like, it's over. It's so funny.
How did you get back up then?
I don't know. I got really depressed. I got really fucked up for a year. I was really like not good. Like,
what do you mean fucked up? Like drugs wise or fucked up?
Like depressed, like wanted to like literally kill myself.
Yeah.
But like that's, you know, that was what kind of, that is what led to like the monster. Because I would go on the internet every day and I would look up quotes. Oh my God, my mom hears this, she's gonna kill me. She hates when I talk about this shit, but it's real though, you know? And yeah. I think that like I'm in such an amazing place right now and I think that's what makes my story interesting, you know? But it's like all these things, like you need to learn in life and you need to go through this shit. Like you need to, you know what I mean? I don't regret anything. I think everything is a blessing. And that though at that time I was walking crying for hours. I just couldn't understand why he wouldn't just call me and be like, yo, because I was 19, like, I was 20, I was 21, whatever. I just couldn't understand why he wouldn't just call me after touring for somebody for 2 years and be like, yo, this is not working out. We want to drop you and we want to do like, we're going to try electronic, like do like a dubstep group, you know?
Whoa.
But that's what led to the monster. I was fucked up. My dad had to come home every day and like make me walk because I didn't want to like leave the house. I was so sad.
And here you are still like internally wanting to pursue something that your dad is.
Yeah. Like, then my dad, after like a while, totally when against. I started getting a little bit better, he's like, uh-uh. You're going to college or you're getting a job. Because I refuse to watch my daughter sit in the basement every day depressed, like just so depressed.
Yeah.
So
then you're on the internet. How does that lead to the monster?
I would look up quotes all day, every day. Like all day, every day, like positive quotes. So, because my mom is a very positive person. She's a very strong woman. So she believes in like healing yourself and like, you know, you are the, what you think is what you bring. So I would Google quotes, and one quote that always stuck with me is, and you, everybody knows it, but in the end, everything's going to be okay. And if it's not okay, then it's not the end. That was one of my favorite quotes. And then another quote, because I couldn't understand the way that I was feeling, was, we stop looking for monsters under the bed when we realize they're inside of us.
Wow.
So I was like, shit. Dang, like, I don't really like the person that I am right now. Like, I don't like the way that I'm feeling. I can't understand it. You know? I couldn't understand it. And I was like, why am I running away from these feelings? Like, you're okay to feel sad, and you're okay to feel anxious. You're okay. Like, you're in a business. We're in a business that's, it's so beautiful, but it's hard. You know, do you know how many people like want to try to do this shit?
Yeah.
You know how many people I see every day sending me fucking MP3s on tour, singing to me at meet and greets? I'm like, it breaks my heart. Cause I'm like, there's so many talented people. Like, there's so many talented kids or older people that this is like a blessing. Like, for us to be doing this is a blessing. We forget.
Totally.
We get caught up, and it's okay. It's a fucked up business, but it's okay to have moments. Every day is not going to be great. So at the time I was like trying to understand, I was like, I hate myself like this. Like, I don't want to feel this way. And I was like angry at myself. And then I was like, wow, I'm like, I instead of like trying to help myself, I'm like victimizing myself, you know? And I went into the studio, and the session was set up, and it was John Bellion, alias Frequency. And I said, there's a quote that I love about monsters. And the song was originally before Eminem did it. Obviously he was talking about his monsters. In the darkest of my times, a little light began to shine. Woke up and I realized that imperfection is divine. And this creepy heart of mine, it keeps tiptoeing on the line. But I know it'll be just fine. Because I'm friends with the monsters that are under my bed. I get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me. Stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy. Well, that's nothing new. And it's a song about, this is who I am, and I'm pretty fucked up, but I'm okay with myself.
Yeah.
And it's about like looking at yourself in the mirror and being like, you know what? I'm pretty fucked up. You're fucked up too. Don't try to save me, because I'm okay with me being the way that I am.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you finish that, there's probably a reason why people, you know, spread that song, is because it's honest and it comes from a real place, and it gets all the way from you struggling in a basement to Eminem.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, like, what a transition from that moment to go from that to, I mean, a literal number one worldwide song. I mean,
it's crazy though. I mean,
how
like,
fast does that happen? And you know, where you go from like, I'm done writing this song. This is a record. Did you think it was for you at the time?
Yeah, and I was about to shop some records. I even played that song when I was going for a record deal.
Sure. Did people love it at the time?
They didn't die over it. They were in like, oh my God, number one. Number one. Like, no. So you, like, from what you'd think that a record executive would do, record exec, top record execs.
Yeah.
Just saying, we're all human. We don't know what the, but we don't know what the fuck is going to work all right. the time. Let's be honest. All we know is what we feel.
Totally.
So I had a manager at the time and he was trying to get me to go into like this more Avril Lavigne type world. And I wanted to go into the more of the monster world, which was more like, to him, was a more alternative, which was hilarious. It ended up being a big number one pop song.
Yeah.
So like when I went to the meetings, even like he was like, don't play those. And then I was like, no, you know what? I want to play this record because I really fuck with this record. He's like, it's too alternative. You're going to throw them off. And I played it for 1A&R. And he's like, I actually like this direction more. He's like, you should go in this direction more. But he didn't say, oh my God, this is the number one hit. Don't leave the room. This is your first single. Like what you think, like a, what you, like what, if you really would have played that shit out, I understand Eminem made it great. But if you hear the original, it's also very dope. But you think...
Did you ever want to release the original?
It was like released on like a blog or something like that, but I would never release it. Like I wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When Rihanna cuts it...
Yeah.
And your voice is still all over it. How soon from when it was released or recorded? Like how soon was it that you realized... Holy,
my mom called me.
Oh my God, you're hearing your voice on the radio.
My mom called me. My mom was like... words, you know how you comp some of the words,
sounds
well,
like you,
well yeah, because you know how it goes, yeah. Like sometimes like you know you get them whitest and you want to stick to some of the things, but I knew the second they asked me for my vocals, my background vocals, because I was crying because I was like 22 whatever, I was like no, or I don't know, whatever, I'm throwing numbers, but I was like no, please don't. I was begging my manager at the time, please don't give me my background vocals because I know that whoever's singing this is not gonna be able to do no. So people were like, wow, you sound like Rihanna. I was like,
oh wow.
But you know what?
Was it
care.
Awesome though when you heard your voice on the radio, or was it
I was
every
sad.
Time?
Yeah. I was really sad at the time.
How do you feel now when you hear it?
I think that song changed my life and I'm forever grateful for it because like people looked at me different and started respecting me differently and it helped me kind of working on my artistry, it helped me do whatever I want. Like I never had to be like a product, like I was never told what to do. I was allowed to make my own mistakes and change my sound and whatever.
We just did an interview with a Hall of Fame writer,
yeah.
Who was talking about, he was like, yeah, the only thing that matters is like, you know, the title, because it needs to sort of tell the story, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And your next, right after Monster, you start releasing songs as an artist with Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And you release, like, I Can't Stop Drinking About You and I'll Show You Crazy, which are both those kinds of titles where you're like, okay, I'm in the story before I don't have to listen to the,
yeah.
to the lyrics in the first verse wondering, you know, what this is about. Are you instinctually doing that, or is someone actually saying to you, like, hey, your song, you know, I mean, as a writer, you're just writing these songs and coming up with these titles, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or are there people that you're co-writing with that are...
Oh, no, I didn't write those. I wrote the song myself.
So crazy.
I wrote I Can't Stop Drinking About You myself, and then I brought it to the Monsters and Strangers, and then I wrote I'm Gonna Show You Crazy myself, and then I brought it to Lauren Christie because we needed a doper hook, so she helped me with
the first time you meet Lauren Christie?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
And John Levine. It was awesome. I like also another person in my life that I feel is like amazing, Lauren Christie. Like, I love that lady.
Yeah. She's
like,
real.
She's amazing.
You release those songs, and it's the first time you start getting some radio play with your voice, as yeah. where you're getting kind of credit for it, and it's there isn't.
But I was told that I was too harsh.
What do you mean?
Like I was too dark
as a lyricist.
Like yeah. just look wise, artist wise, too hard.
Who was telling you this?
Labels and just people.
But you were starting to build your fan base anyway, so you're
yeah.
right. Your
yeah,
fan
I was
base
still kinda,
had to love it.
I was still kind of dark, and like you know, I wasn't gonna be like, hey, I'm happy now. Like, I think it takes time, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Nobody told me you got to write a song, like, with the title in it. I just wrote it based off of true stuff. I Can't Stop Drinking About You was about a guy that I really liked. And then I go out one night. He doesn't want me because he wants to go back to his ex. And then he calls me. And I'm like, yo, leave me the fuck alone, bro. Like, I don't even drink and I'm drinking about you right now. Like,
yeah.
What the hell? And I was like, shit, that's a great song. And then I'm going to show you crazy was when I went to the therapist for the first time and they were trying to throw me on all these meds for like depression. But I'm like, I just need somebody to listen to me. I'm not taking that shit. Like, no, like I'm not doing that.
That's awesome. When you go in and you do Hey Mama, which is the same time, right? You're doing all these at the same time.
Is it? I don't even know.
But give or take.
Yeah, like kind of like in
this
the
same. This is my like,
this is like 3 years. Yeah. Yeah.
You do Hey Mama, you walk in and then here again, your voice is all over it. I mean, not even like a little bit. This time it's
well,
not
I was
even
told,
like
I was told like yet again, the problem that I think I did in my career, the only thing is that I wasn't smart enough to like have the right representation and the right team members around me. Team members are so important. Like I love my lawyer right now, Kenny Masalas. Like I fuck with that motherfucker. Like he is the original GOAT. Like he is a fucking gangster. Like he fights for me, believes in me. Like I would die for the dude. You know what I mean? So it's like I wish I had him then. And then, but then he was around, but then he fought for it after, like, right
which
when we
is
started.
Why they added it later,
that's which is
right?
Why they added it. Yeah. But like, yeah, like I didn't fucking know. Like we wrote this song in like 10 minutes, 20 minutes, me and Sean Douglas, like I don't, not the song, the hook. I didn't know. Like I
in
didn't
that
think
process,
they call me. I remember clearly I was at Pepsi or something like that, doing like a little showcase for them. And you know, and they were like, yeah, you're just on the pre-chorus, like a little part. I was like, okay, cool. Cleared. Like I didn't know to like, they wouldn't send me the vocal. I didn't know.
Were you hanging out with Geta during any of the process?
No, and then they didn't even. I texted Afrojack the other day. You know what I mean? I love Geta. I saw him at the Billboard Awards. I have no. You know what I right. mean? I see Nikki. I work with Nikki again. I can't live my life being angry at people. I forgive people, and it is what it is. Like, we all fucking make mistakes, and we all want to just be successful, and we want to do the best. And sometimes in this business, you get kind of caught up, and you kind of throw. You know, you focus on yourself. It's human nature. Now, like. Whatever, the one thing that I feel like I learned in the business is that it did kind of like, it broke me a little bit. Like it like I was always this kind of like happy girl who was like, yeah, I feel like crying right now.
You can. Like one of the things that's so impressive is that it's so hard. It's so hard to write a song that gets to radio. And it's so hard to write one that people listen to. And then, and it was so, when the second one happened.
Because like I was working for so long, you know, and you got to do interviews, especially as an artist, because you're in the music business and you don't want to put nobody down, because that's not how I grew up, you know. Like I don't want, like you can't even at a certain point say shit about anybody or put people down, because then that makes you look like a shitty person. But it killed me because I feel like I worked so hard, but I never had like, I should have fucking, I don't know, like I didn't know, I had to learn, like I didn't know, I just feel like it you know, I didn't know at the time. They were like, we can't put your name on it because there's too many names on it for radio. I believe that. Right. You're telling me you can't put my name on it? Like, and then they shot the video and they were all like in the desert. And I'm like hitting up Afrojack and Geta. And they're like, oh, we're shooting something, but it's like super private. And then you see the video. Like, that sucks, you know? I just think the thing that the reason why I'm upset is like, I just feel like there's been a lot of situations that were like, you know, I was like kind of like this happy go lucky girl and like kind of like really excited about music. And then I feel like kind of broke me a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But like, whatever, it is what it is. Like, that's what it makes me who I am, you know? So sometimes when I'm misunderstood and I work with these big producers or people and they just want to judge you right off the bat, it's like, you don't know my story. You don't know where I come from. And I refuse to be like this bitter person, you know, but like, does it make me emotional and do I feel hurt sometimes and I got to lie in interviews and say I'm best friends with everybody? Yeah, because I'm not going to go bashing people around. I don't feel like that's the way. You got to forgive. But that killed me, that situation. It sucked, you know, and that's why there's some people in my group that I will forever love. Sam Cox, Lauren Christie, my lawyer went in there and fucking got me that credit. It might have been too late. He might have got me the credit after it hit Billboard number 6 or whatever the fuck it was. I never paid attention. I don't know what the hell. But I knew it was like a good, it did well. But like he got it for me and you know, it kind of let me sleep at night a little bit better.
I mean, also in the industry, everyone know, you know, it wasn't like.
Yeah, but like.
I want you to, you know, just so you know, like the writers though, who are obsessed with writers. We're like super impressed and super proud of you. I mean, you know, they don't, the behind the scenes, everyone knows who makes hits. They just do. And it doesn't happen by accident twice at that point, you know? And so there was like, I think there were more people rooting for you in that process that no one's, look, David Guetta and Nicki have, you know, and at the time Afrojack had a lot of hits. So this isn't, to them, it's part of their discography. It's fine.
Yeah.
But for you, it's like, I think people viewed that as like, I always thought that was almost like a coming out party of like, oh, sick, here's her voice for real and not like hidden.
Yeah.
So like in the end, it obviously, look, I mean,
it's kind of funny how it happened because it's like you have the monster and like, yeah, straight up, my voice is all over it. But like, and then you have Hey Mama and then I finally get credit on it, but it kind of late. And then it's like, here comes Me, Myself and I slowly, you know.
I mean, that must have been, you know, third time's a charm kind of thing. You end up with Me, Myself, and I, and it's like everything's changed. Like,
that definitely changed a lot of stuff. I mean, I wish I could have kept that song for myself, but at the time, I think it was meant to be the way it was. I played it for some people. They didn't hear it, so.
I remember hearing it here because we're at Westlake.
Which version? My version or the
Jeezy version?
Yeah, I love my version, but it was like more like throat, like it was more dancey. But I couldn't find. I sent it to fucking everybody. I was like, I want to keep the song for myself because I love my verses too. They were great. I sent it to at that point also. Like I sent it to Guetta. I sent it also to Afrojack, but Afrojack wanted it for himself, and I was like, no. And then I was like, I was trying to send it to anybody just to kind of recreate it, but nobody could like recreate it that I wanted it, because I kind of wanted to, you know, the way that it kind of came out. Yeah. I didn't know, and at the time I was kind of doing it on my own. I was like trying to like, you know, A&R this record myself, because I kind of knew how like I wanted it to sound, but like I couldn't find the right producer to do it the way that I wanted, you know, because I wanted some like Sam, I wanted it to be like some Sam Smith type of vibe, like a girl version of Sam Smith.
Interesting.
Sam Smith, but like with a little bit of swag and like a little kind of like how G had it, but with my singing verses, you know what I mean? But I think that Mike, the producer, he killed it, you know what I mean? Like I think it was meant to come out the way that it did, you know?
I mean, there's so much of you, like even in those other songs, it really isn't the same kind of real estate. Like you have, you know, a pre-chorus, a chorus, a post on like, it's like, there's so much you in that record. That's like, you know, he's got a first and second verse, and it's like, it really is the first time where I think people get to know you as an artist in a way. I mean, not that you hadn't released songs, but I feel like that's opened the door for all the songs.
Of course.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, 1,000%. To be able to do the iHeart Awards and to start building fans and people to start noticing you, and that was like dope to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was like the coolest thing ever. Like ever.
It must have been a giant, you know, obviously it was a lot of weight off your shoulders to be like,
not yet.
Why?
Because I feel like you want to do it, like, you want it to be, like, a, you know, a BB song, you know what I mean? Everybody says that's a BB song, you know, but I'm like, I don't know, it's just some weird thing that I have.
So is it, like, is that a personal thing, or is that, like, an, you know, like, work?
No, I just feel like, you know, like, I feel like, to me, it's, like, me and G, but I feel like I handed it to G. Like, it wasn't, like, a pure, like, it wasn't BB Rexha right off of Warner Brothers.
Right.
Like, BB Rexha, I could put and say, this is my thing, it's on my album. Like, this is my song. But it is my song. Like, you know what I mean? But to me, because I gave it away, in a sense, even though I was on it, it still wasn't.
You guys have a really good chemistry.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like you guys are really genuine friends.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I just think like, you know, the thing that with me and G is that we're very similar, and I feel like he's very kind, and I feel like he's a dope person. I just feel like we're both, it's hard to be like, I don't know what you consider, like to me, a real friend is like my best friend who lives here, and like we just hang out and we're real genuine friends, and we talk about life and stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
cool.
I guess you could say we're genuine friends in a Hollywood sense.
Right. Yeah. There's
Isn't that fucked up?
No, it's not that like, fucked up.
No, because G's dope. Because I'll call him right now and be like, yo, G, I need you to come do this for me right now. And he would do it. And I would do the same exact thing for him. I did on his tour. I hopped on a plane and I did most of his shows. And I jumped on stage. I didn't get paid for anything. Club appearances, all the promo. Obviously, it was good for myself too. But even for his tours, like for tour, it doesn't matter for me. Like, I don't need to be doing, but I wanted to be there to sing the song for him, you know? Yeah. And I would do, and I had other things. I was starting to finish my project and about to put a single out. And I had other shit to do, but I was still doing it because, you know, we will always kind of have this, you know, special thing because of what that song was, you know? It kind of changed both our lives, you know?
Sure.
The thing is, in LA, there's this vibe of mutual exploitation.
What does that mean, mutual exploitation?
Kind of like if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, versus New York, where it's kind of like every man for himself, every woman for themselves, you know? Yeah. And versus here, it feels like in New York, there's like this, like, I don't need to make friends. I'm here to be, like...
See, I don't agree. Like, okay, you have that sense in New York, but here it's like, I don't need to make friends, but I'm going to fake it. I'm going to play this level up game. Like, it's about leveling, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's just mad fake. That's why I wrote Fuck Fake Friends. G's on it, too.
I mean, here's a great example of what you mean to the industry, that when you're looking at your own songs and how many people are coming on to your music, you know, whether it's like here Nicki Minaj ends up featuring on yours, on, yeah, you know, and starting, like, you just released a record with Lil Wayne on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you're not, it's crazy. You're talking about the biggest artists in the world are featuring on your records.
Yeah.
So, like...
It's cool because it's kind of dope because they first of all, fuck with the songs and they respect me. But I don't even like think about it that way. I just like, I don't know. I just think it's cool.
So the goal now is like, is making sure that the next one that's a hit is you featuring them. I mean, you even have record with Martin Garrix.
Yeah. That Cash, fucking old.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think it's like the next one. I think it's like building levels. And I think my career has been very interesting. It's kind of been like literally levels, like literally like steps.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been like walking up the Empire fucking State Building. If we want to talk about steps, but it's kind of been steps. Cause like when you look at all the greatest careers, you know, I mean, obviously the music business is in a different place right now. You look, go back to the Rihannas, go back to everybody. And now we're in a kind of weird place where, you know, songwriters are kind of coming to be these artists, kind of dope, like the Sias and the Pharrells and the, you know, remember Missy Elliott, and like, that's dope. I think it's so cool because it's like, nobody really, you look at a Rihanna or you look at somebody and you're like, Rihanna. But fucking go all the way back to when that girl came out with, hey, Mr. DJ, some pop W play, Mr. DJ, remember that with her, her Forever 21 outfit or some shit like that? Remember that shit?
Yeah.
And then now she's fucking wearing Balenciaga fucking more than our cars are worth. You know what I mean? She looks like a fucking, she's a badass bitch. I love her. So it's like, you don't look at that stuff, but you don't look at all the song that came after that failed. And then you don't know the story that she had to, who knows, put money into SOS to pay what's his name to get that song to stay on. The label was about to drop her and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
You don't know their journey. It's a long ass journey. That bitch didn't step up. That bitch didn't come out a month ago and is Rihanna. Like Beyonce too. I was thinking about Beyonce. Right. My cousin's like, how did Beyonce do it? Beyonce, how did she do it? She started when she was 19 running on a fucking treadmill with heels and singing. You know what I mean? You don't know her story. Like, she didn't just become Beyonce. You don't just become greatness overnight. Like, greatness is not overnight. It's not. Like, this shit takes a long time. And I could have a number one out the back, but you know how many people I can count on my hand right now with number ones off the back that just fucking fell off? That didn't have a brand, that are not saying anything. I don't want to be that artist. I'm not that artist. Listen, I've worked, and you know, one thing I want to clear up is I've worked with a lot of big producers, a lot of Swedish people. I have nothing but love for them. The thing is also, when I work with a lot of these people, when I was in that weird headspace, when I was anxious and depressed, I wasn't in my right mindset. I was fucked up. I was like fucked up. So I was not the best me that I could possibly be. So like a lot of these people would judge me when I was younger and I was confused and I was hurt and they don't want to work with me. But I'll be straight up right now too. like I, when I first went, when I first met work with Jay Cash, big writer. You work with, you know, Jay Cash.
Yeah.
He had his own issues. He's gonna kill me. But I walked into the studio and he said, "Listen, I've written hits. I'm going downstairs. I'll be back. You got to prove yourself. When I come back, the song better be written." Right now, I fucking love Jay Cash.
Yeah.
He came up to me like a real fucking man. And he said, "I'm so sorry about what I did. I was a shitty person at that time."
Yeah.
And now he's on my songs and he's helping me fix up my songs. And I respect him. I respect his ear. I respect him as a person. And after that, I respect him so much more. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
now
his sobriety is amazing.
But at that time, I hated him so much. You know what I mean?
It's hard when people judge people for the day they meet them, no matter what it is.
That's just life. Yeah. That's just life. But that's the beauty of life. That's what I'm saying. Nothing is do or die. Things come around first, full circle, you know? But like now I'm thinking like with me, I'm like, I look back at everything and I want more. That's like human. I want more. I want more. Like why, you know, Beyonce has a baby and she releases a song. Why does she keep releasing a song? Why does she keep wanting more? She could fucking retire tomorrow.
Right.
And sit on 500 million and she's still fucking Beyonce. Why do you want more? It's human nature. But I think the thing is, my thing has been a journey. And now when I look at it, I'm like, wow, like everything makes sense. It's kind of creepy. It's kind of creepy going all the way back from playing trumpet to then being in the choir, to then singing opera music, to being obsessed with the Stevie Wonder stuff for a year, to going to meeting Sam Cox and the writing things, to getting my songs to getting songs kind of stolen in a sense, to you know, with the Korean stuff, to then doing the Monster and then getting respect from the Monster, to then have to build respect in the music business so that I can do my own music, getting signed to the record label that I'm at right now. And then also being like, yo, like, I don't want to just write songs that are like, I want to say something. And that's what I think the problem is with a lot of these artists is like, they come on the scene and they're pretty great. You're fucking pretty and you look fucking great. But what the fuck are you saying? What the fuck are you saying? What do you mean to my generation? Because when I grew up, my mom played me Lauryn Hill, the miseducational Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, it was a
one. Alanis Morissette, Pink. Who's saying that to me right now? Who's saying that? As a female, the guys are killing the game right now. The guys are killing the fucking game. Kendrick Lamar right now. Kendrick, the new Kendrick album.
Yeah,
Drake, incredible. All these dudes, like Chance. The girls, don't get me wrong. I love Alessia Cara. Like, I fuck with Alessia Cara. That Here record.
That's the biggest mistake of the Grammys this year was that she wasn't up for Best New Artist and there were some other people.
Blows my mind. Alessia Cara.
Prodigy writer.
Like, to me, it's like, don't get me wrong. There's different types of music. We don't got to be hard and heavy all the time.
Do you listen to other types of music? Do you listen to like non-pop stuff? Do you listen to pop stuff?
I don't know. I don't know. I could open up my Spotify right now. I like pop music. I listen straight up hip hop. I like hip hop music.
Yeah, yeah.
I love hip hop. Also, like, I used to listen to a lot of hip hop when I was younger too. Because back in the day, also, there's a website called SoundClick. Have you ever heard of SoundClick?
No.
That's how I started writing my songs and putting them on MySpace. So SoundClick is like a straight up rapper website. And it's like, it'll be like, Johnny on the beat, like every 3 seconds. Johnny on the beat. And I would go and fucking take my mom's credit card, and it was $25 to lease the beat. And if you wanted to buy the beat, it was $500. But I was not going to pay $500. So it was like, you know, Johnny on the beat. And I would, but they would only be hip hop beats. So I didn't know how to find beats at the time. So so where did I find beats? I would Google how to find beats, hip hop beats. Here comes soundclick.com. Went on soundclick.com, found all these beats, but they're all hip hop beats. So that's when I started writing songs. So here I am, a white girl writing on these hip hop beats, but that's what kind of gave me my swag. And then I would take those songs, put them on MySpace, and that's what led to me meeting all these other producers. But all the producers that I mostly work with were hip hop producers. So they all had like this hip hop sensibility.
It's just out of necessity. It's like, this is what I got. So like, I got to learn to write this.
Like, the beat is like, and like I'm trying to like write a pop song to it.
Right.
I'm like, this doesn't sound like the radio. What the fuck? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like weird, but it's funny, you know?
When you write, by the way, are you still writing for other people?
I don't really know. I just write. Yeah, I guess so.
Because I mean, like, you must have a...
No, I mean, I don't... I never write for other. I don't know. It's like a
weird
thing.
Is there a conscious decision to be like, oh, I'm writing for myself, or is it always
never.
For yourself?
It's always for myself.
And then if someone else cuts it,
I could never do that. Like I could, if I started writing for somebody else, I would not be able to write the song. I would be like overthinking. It would not come out.
Yeah.
So like, I just write, and then they'll be like, "Hey, yo, like this song that you don't want, like somebody really wants to sing it." I'll be like, "Who?" And then if I like the person, I'll be like, "Okay, cool, yeah, go ahead." If I fuck with them as an artist, if I don't like them, I'll be like, no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never write for, like, that's because every interview, every person I've ever worked with, like, in like, when I do interviews, because you do, like, all, you know, when you do promo, it's, like, literally 80 interviews in one day, back to back to back to back. It's
how
the same.
How can you be creative in that environment? That sounds awful.
You can't. Uh-huh. When you go, no, you gotta literally, like, there's different, as an artist, there's different modes. You got the writing mode. Where you're like, this, when you're in the studio for a month straight and you're eating like shit and you gain 10 pounds. And then you got the promotion mode when you better start fucking jogging. And then you're literally like, the days are insane. Like, wow. Like,
who
I could.
Who does it? Like, I mean, you have your best friend. I know your cousin's here,
up,
your brother's
I woke
here,
up.
Like-
I woke up. We had a 6 a.m. training session. I had the trainer on the road. Going to Glam. At 7:30, because I gave myself 30 minutes to take a shower, whatever, moisturize, you know, brush my teeth. Then from 7:30 to 9:30, we go into Glam. 10 o'clock to like 8 p.m., straight up promo. I'm talking about MTV, YouTube, Twitter, back to the hotel. Two rooms, they would rent two rooms. You go one room in with the camera crew, the other camera crew setting up in the other room. You go into the other room, that other room breaks down and prepares for that. Then the other room has a, then there's another room with the writer with just the thing on it. Then one person wants to do a Snapchat story, back to back to back to back to back. Then you finish that, you go do radio interviews. You do your radio interviews. You know, like yesterday, the day before, I woke up 2 hours on the phone with radio stations. Then I had a meeting at Apple. Then I went to the studio. It's like crazy.
And this is right. This is the week you release this. I think you're. Didn't it just come out? Did
5 days, 6 days, 7 days?
It comes out in 7 days?
No, it came out.
It just came out.
It just came out. For me, it's nothing. Like, I like it. I'm like, keep me busy because my
baby. Yeah, well, you used to take 3 hours to, you know, trains, planes, automobiles to get to a session to work for probably like 6 hours and then find a way back. So it's not like
6 hours. We'd be there all night.
Your work ethic, though, is pretty much like it was ingrained, you know, when you're 15 trying to do this shit with your parents being like, don't go there. You're like, nah, I gotta go. I'm sorry, but I've got to do this and that and the other. And you were like making your schedule when everyone else
think
is
so?
Like.
Maybe,
know.
Yeah.
I
would sit on the computer for like 12 hours. Oh, yeah. My God. Wait, 3 p.m. when I got home to 3 a.m. in the morning. That's 12 hours, right? I was obsessed with comping vocals. Obsessed.
That sounds so arduous.
I don't know what that means.
Just sounds boring as shit.
That's such a songwriter word.
Arduous? I've never used it in a song.
Really? You should try.
$5 for the first.
Give it to Sia. She could sing
cut.
It. If she was like arduous, you're like, wow, that sounds amazing. I feel like Sia could sing anything; it would sound dope. You know what I mean? Some people will give me like a line in the studio, and they be like, I don't think this line's gonna work. I'm like, yes, it is. Like, it could be a little bit like, I want those croissants right now. I want to eat a croissant. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Because like somebody be like, I want a croissant right now. I really want to eat a croissant. It's like, no, I think it's the way you sing it.
Is that, but yeah, but that's some of that's like your actual given tone. I mean,
maybe.
Unfortunately, I sound like I'm a
shut
five.
Up.
I'm a
shut up. Whatever. Your voice is cray.
Okay, so
Mr. Flo Rida.
I actually asked a lot of people. Like I said, what's a question that I can ask an amazing female pop star? And you answered pretty much every single one. You know, a lot of people were asking about misogyny and why there are so few. Female writers compared to female artists and all this stuff, but I think you've kind of explained a lot of that. But the one thing that I think...
Is there really, though?
I don't think so.
I don't think about it that way. And that's... I don't think about it that way. I think about it as just fucking put the work in. The problem is that if you think that somebody's going to knock on your door and be like, you are so beautiful and you got a crazy-ass motherfucking voice... Here's a record deal, and you are about to be famous in 2 weeks. Bitch, go to fucking Guitar Center, whatever the fuck, Sam Ash. I don't know where the fuck you live. Go, for the people that want to know, go buy yourself a laptop, or if you have one, go buy yourself Pro Tools. If you can, if you don't know how to use Pro Tools, buy yourself Logic. If Logic is still too hard for you, go use fucking GarageBand, right?
Yeah.
Go buy yourself a cheap-ass microphone. Go in the computer and start writing your songs and put the power within you. Because that's the problem, is that even with me, some people are like, wow, you come off too hard. You come off too masculine. You need to be more feminine when you talk to people in the studio. You need to be less. But I'm like, why? Because I know what I want.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, I know what I want.
I think it's super fun.
But I think females could do it. It's that the problem is you got to put the same amount of work in as the guys. A lot of the females that I've met that are successful, pop stars too, even Nicki Minaj, fucking beast. She works like a
workaholic.
Like, I know this is so fucked up to say because I hate saying man, but she works like a fucking man. Like, she's a fucking gangster.
Mm.
You just gotta put the work in. And I think for females, we're told to be like, it's hard too because you're told you have to be this pretty looking thing, but then you have to also sing these amazing songs and then write them or not write them or whatever. But it's like also like society too, you know?
Yeah.
Because as for guys, you could be ugly as fuck, but you just go in and put all the work in. And if you sound good, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I definitely didn't get in the game because I was, you know.
I'm sorry for all the cursing, by the way. My mom,
no,
I hope
good.
She doesn't listen to this shit.
She'll be proud. She'll be proud because you're honest. You're honest throughout this whole process.
You think so? Yeah.
Yeah, I do think so. I think that's probably what all of our parents raised us as, trying to, like, have honest children.
Listen, at the end of the day, I need to go to sleep with a clear mind and know that I was real in every aspect of my life. And I was. And you know what? Yeah. I have no regrets.
Yeah.
Literally no regrets. Zero.
I'm going to make you play one game and then we can go and we can end this thing. But what this one is, I'm going to just name five things and you just tell me what's off the top of your head. We don't have a name for this segment. And I always talk about we have no name for this segment. So I'm going to just name five people, and you just tell me what you think of them. Ready?
No.
Samantha Cox.
Incredible.
Nicki Minaj.
Hardworking.
Adam Marcel.
Yo, fucking beast. Shout out my manager, Adam Marcel. Mercy. Yo, Adam Marcel is a beast. He's amazing. He's kind. We have our moments. But we have a good chemistry.
Yeah, he's so proud of you, and it's fun to watch.
And he believes in me too. You know what I mean? He flew out to Maryland on a little shitty ass jet in a storm to sign me. And I was like, "Who the fuck are you? Like, what are you, 22?" But he works so hard. But the reason why I think it's so great is because we're both young, like, and we're both kind of like around the same age, and this is all we have. We don't go home to our wives. We don't go to, and we made the decision. We go home and we're on our phones thinking about what the next move is. We go to dinner. We're on our, we're just obsessed, but in the most amazing way. Why not be obsessed for right now? Because one day we will.
Uh-huh. Jeff Fenster.
Oh my God. I don't know what's.
Jeff Fenster's your A&R at Warner. I will say, here's a great story about Jeff. Jeff's
I just
awesome.
Like his jokes. I think he's funny as hell.
He is.
You know
is,
what? He's loyal. The
he's
word
so
for
loyal.
The word for Jeff Fenster is loyal, because that he listen like no, I don't. I never met anybody loyal like him before. Like he shows up to sessions. He actually also has a like. Jeff Fenster is not 30 years old. You know what I mean? But fuck his age. His ear. He stays relevant. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, he puts in the effort. It takes so much effort to stay relevant in this, and he's still relevant. And he does put his, like...
He fights for me, though.
He always
fights
for
me, and you know what? And he, one thing that I like about him is that he let me be me, and he always let me be me and always believed in me, and he let me... And you know what? He let me to this journey. He let me grow. He let me develop into being this artist, and he always kind of, like, just was there, you know, kind of, like being a little, like the fount, like the little pillow but underneath me, you know, kind of keeping me, like, comfortable. So he kept me doing what I wanted to do, which led to this point, which is now working.
What about, and this is a kind of a halfer, but your parents, your mom and your dad.
What, like a word, one word for them?
I don't know.
Life,
I mean,
man.
None of these
You're
have been
life.
One word.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I talk too much.
No, no,
hello.
I don't even know.
This game, you need this game. You need to because you're being,
because they were there from the they were there saying to you that you know you have to go get a job and now you're one of the biggest you know writers artists in the music business.
I feel like that's weird.
What
to say that
you don't think
I was
so?
I was out the other day and there was paparazzi and I was like why like I told my manager I was like why the fuck why are they taking pictures of me? He's like because you're like a celebrity. I was like no I'm not. Do not fucking say that word. That's some weird ass word. Like, do not say that shit to me.
You just
like,
don't. You're just. Are you
because,
in denial?
Like, I was, like,
or is it
I
not?
Was getting my eyebrows done, and then the fucking next day, a picture comes out of the fucking. Okay, so usually they're around you, but one time also, the fucking picture came out. I was standing at the corner looking at my thing slunched over with my fucking like little belly like thing coming out. Like obviously you're a human being. How, where the fuck did they take that picture from? Now they got the long cameras. They take them from like a fucking mile away and you look like a beast and you're like, what the fuck? I need to go on Jenny Craig or some shit. Like what the fuck is going on with me? I got to lay off the croissants. No, but I'm like, I hate that word. That word freaks me out.
It's really funny.
That's a weird word to me.
You're kind of in denial.
No. Even though I fight my manager every day, I'm like, what? I was like at the Billboard Awards and I was with Khaled and I was like, why? Like, why do they, why am I doing this? He's like, what? He's like, what are you talking about? Why you're doing this? I was like, I don't know. I don't feel like I belong here. He's like, let's call up your therapist. Ding, 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 ding. No, but my parents, like going back to that, like they're my life. My mom especially is my life. My life. Like I texted her yesterday. I was like, honestly, mom, I was like, whatever happens in my life, I just want to fucking... I want to win. I want to fucking be the biggest. I want to be the fucking best. I won't stop until I won't rest until I am. But I want to fucking win so that I could give you everything that I get. I want to share with my mom. Because I came out here to LA and I'm like, LA is great. I love the weather. But life is not the same without the people you love around you. If you can't share it with them.
Right. Well, like, but that's a really humbling thing. I mean, that's it. Here you are again. I started by saying family because the first time I met you, you had your brother in the studio,
yeah.
And here you have family with you again.
My cousin,
in the studio.
Yeah.
It's
Shady.
Like you have like your.
Well, because I feel like I get really sad when I'm alone. Because I'll be on the road for months at a time. And be like I don't know why I'm sad. My mom's like, because you're lonely, because like you're in a hotel room every night. So like we're doing the Indy 500 on Saturday. I'm singing the Star Spangled Banner. My brother loves cars. My dad's dream was always to go to the Indy 500. So I fucking, you know what I'm, listen, my dad never flew first class before. I fucking got him a first class seat. He deserves it. Let my dad come with my brother and let them come watch me at the Indy 500 and let them enjoy that moment with me.
Yeah.
Because I could die the day after or some shit.
Well, that, if that doesn't sort of exemplify who you are as a human and where you've come through this process.
Yeah. It's
from being like,
I mean, honestly,
being able to.
No, honestly, it's been so insane. I'm sorry for cutting you off. I'm just also shocked too. Like, we did the tour in Europe and we did the tour here. Like, I'm not going to lie. I did a couple of shows back in the past. It was like 100 people. Now, fucking you. I did the in New York. I don't even know what the show, the Irving Plaza sold out. And then we did another show at fucking in Brooklyn sold out. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, yo, 3,000 people came to watch me. I'm like, how? Why? Like,
because you're honest.
But I was like, that's like crazy to me too. Like, because you get caught up in it and you get caught in the game. You get caught in the number game. You get caught in the radio game. You get caught in on Instagram likes. You get caught up in all of this shit. And it's hard. I'm not going to lie. And that's life in general. But like, especially in the music business, you get caught up in this shit. But you got to take a step back sometimes. And it's really hard for me. It's hard because I see like all these other artists who like, you know, they'll come off a Disney Channel and shit and have millions of fans. But it's like, I can't compare them. My journey is different. And that sometimes you got to take a step back and be like, wow, I'm fucking blessed. Because somebody told me that you would never be nothing more than a girl from Staten Island. You will never be nothing more than a girl from Staten Island. But they said it out of love because they wanted me to take the jump and fucking put music out because I was too scared to put my music out. And I could have fucking still be in Staten Island, going to Royal Crown Bakery, the one across from my house, had a million of those Italian butter cookies, 50 pounds overweight, and still trying to make music off my computer. But I'm fucking here in California. My cousin is here hanging with me. We fucking rented a convertible. We're about to drive that shit down fucking Sunset Boulevard, go to our next session,
in the studio where Michael Jackson recorded. Yeah. And they're like, you know, it's go, like, you're
go
in
to, go
the
to fly
heart
to fucking
it.
Do the Indy 500, come back to yeah. practice for Jimmy Kimmel. Like, what the hell? That's crazy. Like, yeah. it's.
But you've
dope.
Earned it. Nobody deserves shit, but you've earned it. You should be. You've earned it. You worked really hard when there was no money, and with people saying that you're never going to make it, and now you're singing, you know, the national anthem. From you went literally. What a great way to bookend this! That you started by singing the national anthem when you're 8 years old.
Did I really? When did I say that one? Oh yeah! Yes! Yes!
Right?
Yes!
So
yes.
there you go. That's
now
how this thing happens.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess
you,
so.
Literally, that is the difference. If there's one way to bookend this conversation, you started by singing
no, you know what
for,
I said?
For
you know,
15 people, and now you're singing national television in
for,
front of
for 8 million people. 8 yeah. million people. But also, you know what my cousin said? We were in Paris the other day. Paris, France. My first show ever was in Poughkeepsie. Poughkeepsie, New York City. So you know what we said? Motherfuckers, Poughkeepsie to motherfucking Paris, France, bitches.
There you go. On that note, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ross, so much.
Really appreciate
everybody,
you.
Everybody, I'm sorry about all the cursing, but that's just who I am. Love, BB. Sorry.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist. Or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to Jeff Sparger, David Silberstein from Mega House Music, and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.